Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi there, this is Martina Navratilova.
Hi, I'm Mats Wilander.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, brought to you from the summertime with myself, Catherine Whittaker, in a wonderful mood due to said summertime, and my co-podcaster, co-companion, co-joy feeler in the sunshine, David Law.
Joy feeler in the sunshine. That's me. Yeah, we're in the pub again, but we're outside.
We're out in the beer garden.
Yeah, we're in the beer garden, and I'm trying very hard to just stick to half.
We're going to have half beer law.
Yeah, half beer law.
For the podcast.
Because there's relatively important things to talk
about. One beer law for dinner after the podcast. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not the most heavy going of podcasts we've had. I mean, there's no, you know, beloved multi-Grand Slam champions have been saying anything racist or sexist this week, but there are still meaty topics requiring our attention.
True, and I at least need to be able to get their names right.
Exactly. Yeah. Which many people can't do with Sasha Zverev, who will be a prime topic of conversation today.
Nobody
can say Zverev.
Well, no, but also the fact that you called him Sasha. I mean, his name is listed as Alexander.
Yeah, but
I call him Alex.
He refers to himself as Sasha, and Misha is officially Misha. It's like when Andy Murray was Andrew Murray for a while. It's only a matter of time before it's Sasha. I mean, everybody, he refers to himself as Sasha.
Stick it in the media guide then, because I find it confusing.
I think next season it will be Sasha. As somebody who
doesn't like to use nicknames at all.
I'm with you there.
I mean, aside from the drop shot dragon, obviously. but I feel very, very uncomfortable calling somebody by
I don't think it is a nickname.
Comfortable calling her Kiki. I don't know her. I mean, she's not a friend of mine, Kiki Mladenovic.
There's a difference between a nickname and a, you know, my family call me Kathy. That's not a nickname to them. That's
well,
just
I'm not
my
calling
name.
You that.
No, because, okay, poor example. But student Matt, his full name, I presume, is Matthew.
Possibly. Let's find out. We'll find out.
And that's not a nickname.
No.
That's just how he prefers to be called.
Okay. Anyway, I'm calling him Alex Zander Zverev until further notice.
I agree that you should err on the side of what they're called in the media guide until that is changed. But I'm certain that in the future that will change.
It's quite an interesting one is Stan Wawrinka, isn't it? Because he actually changed it in the media guide because very, very clever from his agent realised that Stan would be a little bit more approachable than Stanislas.
Because Stanislas, the man, doesn't work.
Not quite. It's not the same.
It's not as brand aware, is it, Stanislas, the man?
No. Well, I mean, you know, as we've tried to come up with something for Drop Shot Dragon, for Laura Siegmund, and we've really struggled to come up with anything that just kind of rolls off the tongue and say it the same way.
There can be more than one Drop Shot Dragon. She's the new generation. She's the next gen, Drop Shot Dragon.
Yeah, true. All right, but yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
This wasn't on the agenda, was it?
Wasn't.
Any of this.
Things that were on the agenda are, of course, Sasha/Alex Zverev, and we will come to talk about him in great, great detail. But I think, first and foremost, we should talk about the man that he defeated in the final of Rome just yesterday, because it is big, it is breaking news. Well, it's not quite breaking news, because actually it was originally broken right here on the Tennis Podcast by Simon Briggs via the medium
rumor, but a correct
of
one.
David Law. It, it was just a shade more than a rumour, wasn't it? It was a rumour. You don't print a rumour.
Wasn't a rumour. Wasn't a rumour from Simon Briggs.
No,
he knew. He had sources, and
yeah,
he
it was a
rumour
from us.
Let's be honest. He nailed it.
He did absolutely. He did absolutely name it. Now, look, what we're talking about, of course, if you haven't twigged yet, is that Novak Djokovic will be coached by Andre Agassi in Paris. And the reason why there was a slight hesitation in my voice there is because, obviously, I was super duper excited when this news was announced yesterday, as I think most people in the tennis world would be. You know, we've been tweeting when it was floated in that podcast where Simon texted you mid-podcast and broke the news. I said, oh my goodness, I would love that, but I can't ever imagine that happening. And obviously I know nothing about what's going to ever happen in the world.
You're not so good with the old coaching things, aren't really your strong points.
No, my credibility is in the toilet still. But I'm delighted, but I think the delight comes with caveats, because I've read all the reports of it. I've of course read Simon Briggs's article in the Telegraph today. I've read a number of other reports, and when you dig into the detail, I think the headline Agassi to coach Djokovic is a slight overstatement, in fact, because what's actually happening is Agassi is going to Roland Garros anyway, which is unusual. He hasn't been to a Grand Slam since he retired. I think he's been to one. He went to the Australian Open, did one day of Jacobs Creek based appearances, and left on the same day.
A little bit of extra publicity there for them.
Oh, if Jacobs Creek want to send me some freebies, that would be just fine.
You've just doubled your quota.
His attendance at Grand Slams is not, he doesn't do any broadcasting, he doesn't do any anything. He's happy to steer right clear. But I understand from a number of reports today that he was due to attend Roland Garros anyway to do some stuff with Longines. I don't know what, they do something so luxury, it's something I
watches,
will never ever own.
Watches, timepieces, I think they're called.
Timepieces,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but well, maybe you'll get one of those.
Watches
for
people that want you to know how much money they have.
Right. Does it tell the time?
I don't want anyone to know how much money I've got.
Right.
I mean, I think it tells the time, but that's rather by the by. Anyway, he was due to attend Paris anyway, and while he's there, he's going to double dip in a bit of consultancy work.
Yeah.
And Djokovic has said, that Andre will not stay to the end, which I don't think constitutes... I don't think you can call someone your coach if you reach the final of a Grand Slam, your first tournament together, and he's not there,
which is what seems to be implied. Catherine. Well, once he gets his teeth stuck in, he'll stay.
If he likes it. What I'm saying is I hope desperately that that's the case, and I think you could be right. I mean, you can't do these things half-heartedly. You can do them half-heartedly in terms of time commitment if you don't want to travel full-time, but in terms of your how committed you feel, if you're fully committed, you can't leave.
Well,
you can't leave when it gets interesting.
How they
can
choose
you?
To handle things logistically, we'll have to wait and see. Emotionally,
when you say that, I'm going on what's been announced,
and what's been announced,
David, is he's not staying to the end.
Yeah,
and that makes me think maybe we're getting a bit overexcited about what is essentially just sort of a blossoming friendship.
No, I think you're wrong.
Oh, I hope so.
I really hope so.
I'm just going on what we have.
I think logistically, the coach-player relationship is not what it was. It just isn't organised.
It's not
like
leaving
that
before
anymore.
The end, is it?
Well, it can be whatever they choose for it to be. I think he will have input. How much have you seen of Ivan Lendl lately? Not much,
but I think if Andy reaches the French Open final, I think Ivan will be there.
Well, I understand that, but these are such early days in that relationship that it's quite possible that Andre Agassi has got other commitments that he can't move.
He has a full-on life
now,
and schedule in
Las Vegas, and he may well have said to Novak Djokovic, look, I will do this. I want to help you. I want to work with you. I'm excited by the prospect. I cannot move A and B. And if you can live with that...
I've got this really important round of golf on French Open finals day that I've got to be back in Vegas for.
He's a bit more important than that, isn't he?
No,
he's not
Tim Henman. Yeah.
Steady. Poor Tim.
Tim would not take that as an insult. He would say, yep, quite right, I've got an important round of golf.
That is true. But I do feel that Agassi will not have even got this far unless he's really up for it. Because why would he? Why would he bother? Why would he even allow his name to be associated?
I'm surprised that he is bothered.
Yeah, so
it's great.
To me, this is a thing now. It's now a question of whether Novak Djokovic can sufficiently woo Andre Agassi to make him want to carry on doing it.
We're going to see 2 weeks of wooing in Paris.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's
going to. What's it going to look like? What's the wooing going to look like?
I think he's going to spend much of his time trying to show off to Andre Agassi. I think that this is what happens with these sort of relationships.
Do you think there'll be a significant upswing in Djokovic's body language and behaviour on the court?
I do. I really do. I think he. I said to you when we were discussing this a couple of weeks ago. No.
Chocolates.
Maybe chocolates. We did talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and I said what Novak Djokovic needs is somebody to get excited about. He needs somebody to make him come into work every day, not thinking, oh, I've won everything in the game, what's the point? Which, subconsciously, I think he's been thinking for the last year. He's been trying to convince himself otherwise.
He's as much as admitted that, hasn't he, I think.
He's needed something to make him feel like a little kid again.
Edberg effect for Federer.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Oh, I think it's a great appointment. Don't get me wrong. When the news was confirmed, I was delighted and I was as carried away as everybody. I've just dug into the detail and I've reined myself in just a little.
Andre Agassi has won 4 slams fewer than Novak Djokovic. But even in Novak Djokovic's eyes, Andre Agassi is cooler. He's done more in the game. As a body of work, as an impact on the sport, he has done more than players who've won many more slams than him, just because of the impact he's had on people. And that's not to disrespect Novak Djokovic in any way. He's still a work in progress. He's still going. He's 30 years old today as we record. But I think that Novak Djokovic wants to just... And this is what I like about what all of these players are doing. It's what I liked about when Murray did it and Federer did it with Edberg. They are not leaving any stone unturned here. They are going to try and wring out the last drop.
Good for him. Can I say something really cynical, which I don't think I necessarily believe, I certainly don't believe it's the main factor. I'm just positing this as a factor. It's something I don't think we should be naive about in modern sports, so therefore we should at least touch upon it, even if you want to completely dismiss it and tell me I'm being a cynical grump and I shouldn't have mentioned it, but I'm just going to mention it. Novak Djokovic, that announcement, rightly so, has garnered a great deal of attention and excitement on both Djokovic and Agassi. Today, Novak Djokovic announces a very big new sponsorship deal. We know, I've mentioned the word Longines, which I've... never in my life
didn't
said
know
before.
What it was.
genuinely didn't know what it was because I've been looking into the sponsor activities of Andre Agassi in Paris.
Yeah.
Could there be an element of, you know, it's good for the brand. It was great for Boris's brand. It was great for Novak's brand that Boris was with him. I'm not suggesting for a moment that's the main motivation and it's 100% cynicism. Even if there's a degree of cynicism, it is... for sure not the main thing.
Sorry, do you mean the fact that they're getting together at all or the timing that it's on the day that he's announced the new clothing sponsor?
I think the timing is for sure cynical. And that's, I mean, but marketing is cynical. I mean, isn't it? Marketing is a cynical game.
If that were the case, then
I think
I think he would have actually had to orchestrate and preordain that he would... that the leak would come out because his confirming it was off the back of
I don't think his confirming it was orchestrated. I think he was always... Well, he would have had to have confirmed it before Paris when Agassi rocks up, I think, the announcement of that clothing sponsor. But then, look.
No, that had already been in the books, I think. That's...
But the announcement thereof. I suppose, we're debating the... It is
possible.
I'm just saying, it crosses through these people's minds.
That stuff does happen sometimes. I think, you know, there's a betting company that's forever trying to put out odds on something or say that they've paid out on something, which maybe they haven't, in order to get mentioned. That sort of stuff does happen. I'd like to not think cynically and assume that no, but I do feel that generally speaking, yes, there's no question that Novak Djokovic's profile, like
it's going to be great for him. Lendl's great for Murray profile-wise. Boris was great for him.
But I don't think that's the reason he's doing it. I think he's doing it from a sheer boyhood idol. And, you know, like I said, there's not too many people that Novak Djokovic can look at and get excited about in the tennis world.
I agree with you. Okay, so let's say he's doing this from... Let's say David Law's assessed this bang on, which I'm quite sure is the case.
He's doing it for the
boyhood idol excitement reasons. Agassi was his boyhood idol, but we know that his number one boyhood idol was Pete Sampras. Do you think the call went in to Pete?
It's possible.
Of course it's possible.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I don't know. I would think not.
Really?
For the reason that I just think that Agassi is a better fit.
Personality-wise?
Game-wise, personality-wise, journey-wise. You know,
journey.
If you look at where Agassi went, their trajectory is not dissimilar.
Absolutely. I mean, Agassi was in some major wilderness there for a while, but
more than once too.
The main wilderness was massive. Wilderness.
Yeah, but if you look at the early years, Agassi came on the scene. Then he won Wimbledon. He struggled for a couple of years. Then he won the U.S. Open and all that stuff in the mid 90s when he was dominating Sampras the way that Djokovic was dominating everybody in 2011, and then he had two or three years where he didn't do an awful lot, and then he went and dominated again, and then
in his 30s.
And now in the last year he struggled. Agassi had the down to 141 in the world after having beaten Sampras regularly. He beat him in the Australian Open final, lost to him in Indian Wells, then beat him in Miami, beat him in Toronto in 95. Sampras eventually got him at the US Open in 95. But Agassi, I remember because I was a Sampras fan back then when I was just a teenager, I wasn't a teenager, I wish I was. I was 22. And I was watching all of their matches. That was my favourite rivalry of all time at the time. And I was cheering for Pete Sampras back then. And he could not really, until that US Open final, he couldn't get hold of Agassi. Agassi was the man. But then after Agassi had achieved all that, his interest level dipped. And there's a similarity there. There's that feeling of, well, what am I doing this for?
Oh, I completely agree with everything. I think it all makes marvellous sense.
And game-wise, look at them.
Yeah,
look at
of course it does. It's return and backhand and intensity, isn't it? Those are all the things that Djokovic does best too, but he's been doing some of the practical technical things less well because he's lost some of the intensity, and I don't think Agassi will settle for anything less than 100% intensity. And
I once told Andre Agassi that I was a Pete Sampras fan when I was younger as well.
I haven't been brave enough to do with Goran Ivanisevic.
Yeah, he was curious as to why.
So he didn't make a joke about it. He genuinely required some explanation.
Yeah, he was this was when I was a very, very young communications manager at the ATP. And actually, I spent about 6 months going to tennis tournaments with Andre Agassi during his comeback from the 140 in the world period. And we went to tournaments in Prague and Ostrava and Basel, you know, relatively smaller tournaments. And Agassi went to all of these, and it was just when he'd broken up with Brooke Shields, and it was fascinating to be in his company. It was before he had that run to the French and won it in 99, so it was all in 1998 this was, and just seeing the period of his life that he was in, and I was kind of like probably the only other local English language speaker around.
You're
really
his confidant, David.
No. But I was asking him stuff. I was asking him his advice on. I asked his advice on a few life matters
Such
that I was
as,
going through at the time.
What has Andre Agassi helped you with in life, David?
This was
Come
before
on.
I met my oh, wife.
New
and
segment.
I,
new segment.
I was very curious as to how he suggested that I should speak to a certain woman.
Not
then.
Your wife.
Not my wife. No. Didn't
well, that
work.
Was unsuccessful. Then
didn't work. No. But then I met
oh,
my
it's
wife.
A sliding door situation.
I stuck with the advice that he gave, and I used the same. Line.
Are you saying, David, that you wouldn't have married your wife if it wasn't for Andre
No,
Agassi?
Actually, that's not true because she's Croatian, and I actually used one of Goran's lines just because he's the only one who could speak it. And then it turned out that my wife spoke better English than me, so that was pointless.
I feel a new segment coming on: how a tennis player changed my life.
What can I say?
Wow. I mean, I really, really desperately don't want to change the subject from this.
Anyway, Andre, all I can say is, and sorry, apologies for the horrific name dropping that I've just unannounced dropped in. But I have to say that he was really nice to me, Andre Agassi. I was really sort of pleasantly surprised.
See, I didn't know him at all. I had a brief interview with him as part of that Jacob's Creek media tour when we mostly spoke about Jacob's Creek. But I don't know him at all. He's never played in the Champions Tour. Will he be on board with Peace and Love?
I think he's the perfect person to mix with any of the characters in Djokovic's camp, to be honest. I mean, he's a very easy guy to get along with. And I think he's. I don't know what Pepe Maz's role will be in the future and all that, but I just think that Agassi could love this. I think he really could, and I think him and Djokovic will get along famously. Actually,
well, it certainly makes Paris in what 5 days' time. Qualifying, in fact, has already started. Eurosport covering the qualifying on the Eurosport Player, which I think is cracking and rather. I think puts a dent in all these conspiracy theories about ESPN have announced today that they will be covering Wimbledon qualies and their coverage in the States, and everyone's saying, oh, all this coverage of qualies is just because of Maria Sharapova. Well, Eurosport covering French Open qualies for the first time and she's not there, so I think that's great. I tuned in today to watch two players that I'd never heard of, and gosh darn it, they were good. And it just makes you realise how many blooming good tennis players there are out there that are just flogging
and you
away.
Know, the qualies
that no one will probably ever have heard of.
We've
most
talked
likely.
About this before a little bit, but the qualies tournaments are just events on their own. There's 128 players or whatever it is in the qualies draw, and they've all got their own story, their own history, how they got there, how they scraped in.
The stakes are so high for them.
The various back posts of the world that they've gone to in order to try to scrape into that draw. Some of them don't even know they're in the draw until an hour before they end up taking the court or whatever it is because of pullouts and stuff. And, yeah, it's... If you get to go, just walk around those courts and watch the tennis, enjoy the tennis, but also just think about these human beings who are just scrapping to try to make it. And there's so many that fall by the wayside and
never... We're not talking about making it in a Djokovic or Murray sense. We're talking about making it make a living. Be able to go to the next tournament.
Be able to be a professional tennis player.
Doing what they love, assuming they do love it, which I'm sure not all of them do, for the next month, for the next 6 months. I completely agree. But we should probably talk about Sasha's Zverev, unless you want to talk about more about the life advice that Andre Agassi, the woman advice
I've got
that
to leave something for next week, haven't I?
Okay, because I mean that door is always open, David.
All I can say is it didn't work first time round. She just looked at me as like, can you go away? Or
if at first you don't succeed, was that his advice?
That was also part of it. I mean, I went on a similar trajectory, you could say, of lack of success, and then ultimately...
I regret saying that now, because if at first you don't succeed is not... that. I mean, that's just sort of sexual harassment, isn't it?
Different people, though.
Different.
Wasn't the same person, Catherine. I took the hint very quickly.
Anyway,
it's
all ended up fine.
Yeah.
Thanks to Goran and Andre Agassi.
20 years of marriage later. Whatever.
Yeah, thanks to Goran and Andre for making David the happy man that he is today as he sips his Heineken in the sun here in Putney and we talk about tennis. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Not bad.
Sasha Zverev, life's pretty good for him at the moment as well, isn't it?
Not half.
I tell you what,
He's better than I thought. What it is with him is he makes it look so easy, and it's not the sort of the Federer grace and the sort of outrageous elements of talent in that way. It's more Djokovic-esque in terms of it's this relentless power barrage, but it's done without even looking as though he's trying to hit the ball hard. It doesn't seem to be a struggle. He's 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and he, He moves around the court with
Jed's
ease.
We had Jed Screen on the podcast, what was it, a couple of years ago now, talking specifically about his physical plan with Sasha / Alex Zverev.
We
should probably dig that out and promote it on social media, because that would be a even more fascinating listen today than it was then, because he was talking about a 5 or 6 year plan with Zverev, and that was 2 years ago. And we haven't checked in with Jez Green about it. I will try to if I see him in Paris, but they must be massively ahead of schedule. Even in his wildest dreams,
I would still point out that he's twice played Kyrgios this year and lost, and because of Kyrgios's brilliance. And I still think that matchup, I look at it and I still think Kyrgios is going to win most of those.
That's like Federer and Nadal, isn't it? I mean, some matchups just don't work.
It is, and we'll talk a little bit later about team and what he had to deal with against Djokovic. But just how comfortable Zverev looks in that arena. He
didn't waver for a moment.
He's born to it. The difference is, as well, he's not going to have these massive peaks and troughs emotionally, I don't think, that Kyrgios has had and will have. Just the different human beings. Zverev is made for this. He is Federer-like in his love of the game, and his sort of absolutely no question that this is where he wants to be.
It's an insatiable appetite for playing tennis and for winning. I think he has both that Djokovic-esque sort of.
He's also got a bit of
ferocious
that showmanship
love of
as well, though.
Because he absolutely does.
During that match against Kyrgios, the moment I won't forget is when Kyrgios had got him. He got his number, and you're thinking the match is over here. And Zverev won a point that he really shouldn't have won in terms of logic. And at the end of it, he just is screaming at the top of his voice and shaking his finger, and he's saying, "I'm not going anywhere." And I love that.
Yeah, I mean, what I was most impressed about that performance in Rome in the final against the world number two was that it wasn't spectacular. There were moments of it being spectacular. I mean, sometimes you do get a young player that just comes out and has nothing to lose and just goes for everything. You know, Philippoussis against Sampras at the Australian Open in, 96?
Yeah.
It wasn't that. It wasn't somebody with nothing to lose going for everything and just redlining it. It was a really mature performance. There were moments of brilliance. There were moments of audacious winners. And there were plenty of backhand down the line winners that were just gorgeous, because that shot, I mean, his backhand is to die for. But it was more mature than that. He was like, I can go toe-to-toe in a baseline rally with Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
And he wasn't at his best, Novak.
What was reminiscent of Sampras-Philippoussis is that Philippoussis did to Sampras what Sampras does to everybody else.
Yes.
And Zverev did to Djokovic what Djokovic does to everybody else. And it was show-stopping stuff, because you stood there looking at it and you're thinking, I don't think Djokovic can do anything about this. Unless he falls off his level. I don't see what you can do.
Because he's
similar, and he's bigger, and he's stronger.
Well, now then, on the subject of Djokovic. So it was a really fascinating, bizarre week that didn't fit into any one clean-cut narrative for Djokovic, in the way that, you know, it fitted. Andy Murray's week in Rome fitted perfectly into the Andy Murray's having a slump narrative, didn't you? You know, you could put that right in the story. Boom, yes. With Novak Djokovic, it was a strange week. I commentated his first match against Ali Ashbedeni that had taken place before our last podcast, and he actually played pretty well, but his body language, his mental state on the court was appalling. And then he really cranked it up a few gears, and I was very impressed with his third round match against Batista Agut. That was quarter final against Batista Agut, I think. Was that third round match? He beat Batista Agut 6-4, 6-4. Very impressive. I thought that was great. Then we have the semi-final against Dominic Thiem, and it's lights out, unbelievable, unplayable. Djokovic at his absolute best. And yes, I agree with you that there's an issue with the matchup for Dominic Thiem against Djokovic. It does not suit him one bit, but nonetheless, he did redline it. It was awesome. Djokovic was his very best. He was motivated. He was dialed in. He was pumping his chest. He was a defiant, ferocious animal again on the court. And then against Zverev, who you'd think he would be incredibly motivated to be that ferocious animal against, you know, putting a young guy in his place. That does motivate these guys, doesn't it? To show these young guns that your time hasn't quite come yet. it wasn't a brilliant performance. It wasn't awful. It wasn't awful, and the body language wasn't as bad as it was against Bedene, but it was bizarre given it came after that incredible performance.
It was
against
similar to the 0-2 when he thrashed, admittedly, David Goffin. It was an alternate, but he played beautifully, and then he lost to Murray in a pretty listless performance in the final. It was quite similar because, again, that was Ben Rothenberg was talking about how every time he plays Del Potro and beats him, we immediately announce that Novak Djokovic is back.
And it's just a good matchup.
And he's right. I mean, and I know that. Yeah, but he's producing really, really high level tennis.
He is.
Tennis.
I agree. As I said last week, the tennis against Bedene was high.
But then he is falling off because even as well as Zverev played, that wasn't Novak Djokovic from the semi.
No, it wasn't. And I'm loath to bring it up because I don't want to take anything away from Zverev because most people would still have lost to Djokovic yesterday. It wasn't awful. It was not awful. It was just bizarre and pale in comparison to the performance against Thiem.
I do think, though, that Agassi now has something to play with here, something to get his teeth into. He's, you know, Djokovic knows there have been enough malfunctions now for Djokovic to know that he's got to listen to the guy. He's got, and I think what he's done is, look, it may not end up working, but he needed to do something. Getting rid of that tried and trusted Thiem of his who, you know, did a wonderful job with him. It was the right time, I think, and he needed to, in his words, shock himself, you know, reboot, go back to the beginning and get a new set of ideas. And he can have no complaints now if it doesn't work. It's just, he's doing the right things, I think.
What do you make of Dominic Thiem then?
Great.
Incredible against Nadal.
Great week.
I enjoyed that performance. I didn't enjoy watching Nadal get beaten by that, but that performance was just edible in its beauty. It was
Wawrinka like, wasn't it? It was Wawrinka against Djokovic like.
Yeah.
In terms of its sheer power and
I found myself saying in commentary of that match that I thought Thiem's backhand was actually better than Wawrinka's, which I caveated
short memories.
No. I said his backhand down the line was better than Wawrinka's, and Wawrinka probably had the edge on the cross court.
Just go and watch that final from two years ago.
One shot, the backhand down the line.
Go and watch it.
Yeah, and then compare them side by side.
I'm not saying that Thiem's is inferior, but that was... Yeah. I remember how I felt watching it. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, no, you are right. And I didn't say it I said it tentatively. It's good though. Bottom line, it's a good backhand.
Pretty good.
It's quite a good backhand.
It's an amazing backhand. It's a thing of beauty.
And I think maybe I weight it more high, even though the beauty of it and the end result of it is only as good or perhaps slightly inferior to Wawrinka's. Maybe I weight it more highly because he produces the same power with not the same physique. I mean, he's a lot stronger looking than he was. He's obviously spent some time in the gym, for sure. But he does not have the physique of Stan Wawrinka. He isn't an ox.
No, but that's not where power comes from.
Well, it is sometimes.
Look, it depends on the player. Look at Alexander Zverev. I described that man as a giraffe with a wig during the Australian Open. And... Jesus. That didn't go down very well, I can tell you. And I've just set my foot in it again. But anyway, look at Gustavo Kuerten. You know, there was not an ounce of muscle on him, and yet he would produce these extraordinary winners from
nowhere. Yeah, but we do sort of give extra credit for doing it through timing and through sort of more delicate techniques rather than just with sheer brute force. Look at how praise was heaped on Justine Henin for the power and the efficiency of her backhand, despite her being
I'm not sure that physical size and strength is what determines power.
It's absolutely not. Dominic Thiem alone is evidence of that. I'm just saying we perhaps give more credit to a powerful shot if it's not produced by brute force.
Huge upturn for him. He keeps incrementally improving.
Okay, but what about love and one and love to Djokovic?
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's not an incremental improvement.
It was a reminder of how quick we are as a viewing public and a media to immediately anoint somebody as the next French Open champion, etc. Which is what a lot of people were doing that after he beat Nadal.
Come on.
They were, Catherine.
Nadal is. Who did that? Name
loads
and shame.
Of people.
Name
no, I'm
and
not.
Shame. Give me one name.
No, I'm not.
One name.
I'll tell you after.
And I'll tweet it.
But there were lots of people doing it, and look, I'm guilty of it sometimes with people. I get overexcited about people.
You wouldn't be that rash.
No, but I mean, we very quickly decide that Djokovic is back to his best, and then he goes and loses Zverev. People are now saying, you know, I did a pole vault, Catherine, on who's going to win a slam between first out of Zverev, Thiem, and Nick Kyrgios. Who do you think, first of all?
Zverev, Thiem, and Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, who's going to win a slam first?
Well, I don't think Thiem is going to win this French Open.
965 votes.
Porn bots.
No, they're not. They're people with feelings.
They are people. And good luck to all of you. You're in a little club.
Okay, so Catherine.
Good for you. I don't want to be in it.
What do you think? Pole vault. Hashtag.
I think Thiem will win a French Open one day. I don't think it'll be for a couple of years. I could see him winning the 2019 French Open, let's say. So the question we're asking me, I'm asking me, you're asking me, is will one of the other two win a Grand Slam before then? I think Zverev might, yeah.
Zverev came out on top, admittedly.
Kyrgios could win any slam on any day, but he's a Wawrinka.
I'm never
going to predict it.
You said he never would win.
But I've also said since then, I haven't revised my opinion. I am revising.
Okay, all right, fine.
I am.
Well,
I
asked this question 15 minutes after the Zverev win, so I think that was probably responsible for skewing it a little. 49%, so nearly half of 965 people think Zverev is the most likely to win one first. Then Thiem on 25%. Then Kyrgios on 22%. 4% think none of them will win a slam.
Oh, I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's not impossible.
Nothing's impossible, David.
I don't think I'm going to win one.
Touché.
I think that's impossible.
You could get the advice of Andre Agassi.
Well, you know, just, I mean, Kimiko Dato's older than me. So she might win one.
It is not just about age.
She's the only
player. If 2017 has taught us anything, it is not just about age.
Do you know how when you sort of measure where you are in life as to how old you are versus the tennis players? There is only Kimiko Dato now that is older than me.
What about Tommy Haas, Radek Stepanek?
No.
Oh, that was something that was in... Was it in Mike Dixon's piece or was it in Simon Briggs'
piece?
Mike
Dixon, possible
Mike Dixon of
assistant
Daily Mail.
Coach of Novak Djokovic, perhaps.
Well,
certainly steady. Well, Mike's a good bloke.
He's
very good.
The
writer.
Tennis writing is excellent.
Yeah, Stepanek is somebody who gets along famously with Novak Djokovic.
So I had a bit of input with Nick Kyrgios last year.
Yeah, those two get along famously too.
Well, no, but it was more about getting on. Nick Kyrgios said in his interview with the New York Times, didn't he, that Stepanek had been a guiding hand.
Is it time for another drink yet?
It might just be.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right then, we are replenished and we do have several more topics to cover. Most of them are WTA related and we must give that the time it deserves. But very, very quickly, we haven't talked about Nadal and the fact that he did... We've talked about the fact that he lost a team, but only from a team perspective. Do we think it's a blessing in disguise? Un mal pour un bien, as the French say.
It is one of those... That was very good. It was one of those that I think probably if he'd have kept on winning, I'd have been saying, oh, you know, now he's got this invincibility about him and all that sort of thing. My first instinct when he lost the match was, wow, team, well played. That'll probably do Rafael Nadal some good. And only in as much as he will play 2 days less, get 2 days more recovery time to refresh. He's had plenty of tennis. He's match tough. He's bang in form. He's fit and fresh. I don't think it'll do him any harm at all. In fact, ultimately, I think it will help him go into the French as good as he possibly could be in terms of form and fitness.
And I think the consensus of opinion almost overwhelmingly, or certainly overwhelmingly, agrees with you. The only thing that chimes a bit at the back of my mind is that it would have been so amazing. He's never won all four of the warm-up tournaments he plays for the French Open, even in his... I mean, he is already, regardless of whether he wins the French year, the all-time greatest clay court player, and the stats back that up. I don't think that's really something that's... It's not one of those points that people get angry about and say, oh, no, you're forgetting Rod Laver, like they do with saying Federer is the greatest of all time. I think most people accept that. Even in his all-time great days, he never won Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid and Rome. And there is a part of me that is sad that because that would have been... For him to do that now, after having been written off, would have just been... unreal for him to still be doing things he's never done before.
Yeah,
but winning 10 French Opens could and will likely be pretty great.
Yeah, I think that'll do, especially 10 of three different tournaments in the same
year.
Yeah,
I mean it's all been fine. The
bigger point is that he does come in now as fresh as he possibly could. I mean, it's quite interesting. I discussed this with Nigel Sears. He wasn't completely convinced by my argument on that. He felt that if he'd have kept winning, to have not had any loss against him on clay going in would have scared the living daylights out of people.
Oh, I think so too. I don't think it's a positive that he lost. I just don't think... I think it's a neutral. I think the benefits
I just don't think the way the team had to go about it in order to beat him and literally just try and hit every single ball as hard as he could. I don't think you could do that against him over the best of five. Maybe you could look at Stan Wawrinka and say, well, he did it against Djokovic. I don't believe that anybody else would do that over the best of five. So
I agree. It's an audacious thing to do, to go out against a guy unbeaten 17-0 on a surface in a season and to play like that. It takes an awful lot of confidence, and team isn't that kind of character naturally. I think that's why it took him two meetings on clay this season and two sort of problem-solving attempts for him to get up both the guts and the realisation that that's what he needed to do. And boy, did it work. But I agree, still over the best of five sets, I would pick Nadal in a matchup with Dominic Thiem, but I'd love to see it. I do hope they're drawn to face one another at some stage.
That draw is going to be fascinating, isn't it?
It's going to be one of the most interesting draws, I think, and we've said that a lot recently, but that's because tennis is very interesting at the moment.
The
draw is Friday.
Mm. Okay, Catherine Whittaker will be there for Eurosport.
David Law will be on the podcast for Eurosport and for The Telegraph and just for the podcast. But remotely. He's got big London-based fish to fry at this time of year. But I will be in Paris for Eurosport, and hopefully I'll be speaking to lots of Eurosporty people.
And podcasting when she can.
Which I hope will be very, very frequently indeed. There will be almost daily podcasts from the French Open. Don't worry, you won't be deprived of any coverage during the French Open. You'll be just fine. WTA-wise, I mean, if the ATP draw is going to be interesting, the WTA draw is going to be scintillating, isn't it? I mean, things are shaping up so bizarrely and fascinatingly and unpredictably. I mean, I'm not sure anybody should bother predicting anything for the women's event at Roland Garros.
And yet we're still going to do it.
Simona Halep.
Because that's what we do here.
Brilliant. Just brilliant.
Yeah, but that was a worrying tale.
It almost doesn't matter how brilliant she can be and has been and should be if she can lose in the way she did yesterday to Elina Svitolina. I'm actually commentated on for BT Sport.
I did, and I was... I have no idea how she was feeling physically. Let's be fair. She won Madrid the week before. She got to the final here. That's a lot of tennis in a couple of weeks spell. It may have been, and she had a nasty tumble on an ankle, which can sicken you. I think when you twist an ankle like that, it really can knock the stuffing out of
yes,
you.
Yes, although Darren Cahill came onto court a few games after that when she was starting to collapse mentally, and she didn't say anything about the ankle at all. She didn't mention it. He didn't mention it. If it had been troubling her, if that was that bigger thing, she would have mentioned
it, surely.
Look,
with the caveat that I do not know how she was feeling physically, internally I'm looking at Simona Halep in that final set and I'm thinking she's gone back to where she was in Miami. That is how it felt. It felt as though she'd had a big disappointment, she wasn't feeling great, and she kind of just resigned herself to the fact that this wasn't going to happen. And now I may be wrong. That is how it felt watching it.
It is what it felt like, yeah.
And that's a worry for her and her fans. I mean, hopefully, from her perspective, freshening them over the next week will mean that she goes into every match at the French Open feeling fresh and well. But the chances are you're going to have to play some matches where you don't feel like that. And she's got to be able to keep her level even when it's not going that well. And in that final set she lost 6-1. That's not great. Let's not take anything away though from Svitolina, who was outplayed for a set and
kept her
who
head.
Just kept going. And I think that
more titles than anyone else on WTA Tour.
30 wins on the circuit this year, 31 wins now, at the head of the race to Singapore. She just wanted to qualify this year, I think, and here she is leading that race. Now she's won Dubai, she's won Rome, but the way she dealt with the disappointment of losing that first set and being outplayed and still sticking in there was a great lesson to all the players, but I think it just showed her, you know, I can hang with these people. I mean, she beat Pliskova as well.
French Open contender?
Yeah, unquestionably a French Open contender.
So who's your top five then? Is Muguruza in it now?
If she's fit, yes, absolutely.
Neck injury, of course, causing her
to retire, I think she's unquestionably in the top five. She was brilliant against
Venus Williams.
Well, hang
on, we recorded a podcast 5 days ago and she wasn't in the top five. So.
No, I said at the time, she is the Stan Wawrinka of women's tennis.
You did, but you did say no to the top five.
Well, I've changed my mind.
Which is completely allowed.
Yeah, okay, so Garbiñe Muguruza, Elina Svitolina, Simona Halep, Svetlana Kuznetsova, and my fifth player. Oh dear. Who's my fifth player going to be? Just leave that one with me for a few minutes.
I think I've
written it now.
Mladenovic?
Oh, yeah, Mladenovic, that's who it was.
Well, those are the five options I gave Rosie, because that is my shortlist as well.
I didn't hear Mladenovic in your options. I thought there were four.
No, she was there. There were five. She was the first one.
Oh, okay. Who's she
there
for?
So I'm sure you're all on the edge of your seats to find out who Rosie has picked to win the French Open. If you're thinking, what are we on about? Rosie is my dog, or my parents' dog, and she's really good at predicting tennis results. She is the tennis version of Paul the Octopus.
What happened with the old Roland Garros wild card for Maria Sharapova?
Yeah, but she was on the fence a bit about it. She definitely... She
are we
had
interpreting
qualms.
The data differently
I think,
now?
I think I misinterpreted her reaction. But with this one, there is no room for error on the interpretation. You will have to go to our Facebook or our Instagram page.
Honourable mention I also have for Sam Stosur, who I think is capable of doing some damage there. But those would be my five, yeah.
Doing some damage is the vaguest term. You always use it. I won't allow it. What could she do? Could she win it?
Yeah.
She could win it. I mean, there's so many people that could win it.
They could, but let me just say, a little bit of a rant coming up here.
Oh.
Right. Courtney Nguyen, a while back, made that point, didn't she, that the sweet spot for women's tennis is so small.
Yep.
And this strikes me that is bang on, because when Martina Navratilova and Serena Williams were dominating the tennis circuit, they would, you know, people would say, oh, Women's depth, tennis no is depth. So boring. You always know who's going to win.
There's no depth. You know, there's just those two, and everyone else is rubbish.
You'd have all those conversations where people would go, who's going to win? Well, Serena, isn't it? I mean, you know, as long as she wants to, right? You never had that when Federer and Nadal were dominating the tennis circuit and Borg was dominating and people like that. Now we have this situation where so many players we think could win it, and it's open, and you could interpret that as exciting and as an opportunity, and all the matches are going to have an unknown quantity to them, and yet so many people end up going, oh, well, it's just
a race to the bottom.
Well, people just go, well, who knows who's going to win it? Rather than going, who knows who's going to win it?
You know, all these overs and, you know, people that nobody knows.
No rivalries.
Really,
and no rivalries, no stars.
Nobody that anyone's engaged with, really. And that's your fault. Engage with them because they're interesting and they're great tennis players.
And,
that's your fault.
You know, I say this is going to be thrilling, this French Open.
Completely agree. Angelique Kerber doesn't seem to be anyone's top five. Not me, not you, not Rosie. That's the definitive poll right there.
Don't you feel that apart from in the UK, where I think there are a lot of questions being asked about Andy Murray at the moment, generally speaking, people are making more of a sort of disdainful dismissal of Angelique Kerber than they are to Andy Murray.
People are drawing wider conclusions about women's tennis on the basis of what Angelique Kerber is going through than with Andy Murray. Nobody says, oh, the world number one's having a slump. What does this mean for men's tennis? Disaster. Does it mean that the depth isn't there? Does it mean that... What does this mean? No, everyone's talking about what it means for Andy Murray and whether or not he can regain his form. But there's no sort of wider ripples talked about in the way that there are with women's tennis. And isn't it shocking that Angelique Kerber has become the world number one, even though she lost early this week? And isn't it shocking that she's playing so rubbish and she's still world number one? How does that make women look? And women's tennis, I mean, just, you can all bog off. None of the you that I'm referring to, of course, listen to this tennis podcast. You're all an absolute enlightened delight. But we're just saying that those opinions exist out there, and it's a shame.
Rant achieved.
Rant achieved. What else have we got to talk about, David? Victoria Azarenka. Goodness, there's nothing to rant about here.
I love Victoria Azarenka. She's great.
I do too. I think she's cracking, and I think she's been misunderstood for most of her career. And I think she's going to come back. I think she's going to come back, and people are going to get her in the way that
because
she deserves to be got.
You know,
because she's interesting.
And
I'm not saying she's always behaved
perfectly.
She stopped
trying to worry about it. She's, and because I often go back to that year that we had the rally for Bali for, you know, the much missed Elena Baltacha to raise money for the Elena Baltacha Foundation, and Victoria Azarenka got involved in that to fundraise at Queens, actually, and she was the star of the show. We had a charity match with celebs and so forth, and
celebs.
Former players,
you mean celebrities, David? Current,
yeah, I did.
You're spelling celebs S-L-E-B-S.
Probably, yeah.
Celebs.
I'm not so good at the spelling.
Like Roger Federer going to Pipple Middleton's wedding.
Well, yeah, but anyway, Victoria Azarenka put a policeman's hat on and sat in the umpire's chair and had people roaring with laughter. She was such a good laugh, and she was really nice off the court, and it just struck me that she had spent too long probably trying to be what she thought people expected
her to
be. And actually, she's a great laugh, just as she is, and I'm delighted she's coming back for Wimbledon.
She's great. Well, yeah, that is... Sorry, I failed to even say what the announcement was. I just assume that you tennis geeks like us know these things. But yes, she's coming back for Wimbledon. She says she'll play one grass court warm-up event as well, TBA. She doesn't know which one it'll be yet, so I guess it'll be Eastbourne or Nottingham or Birmingham. Could be in Mallorca, but I'd be surprised. I would have my eye on Birmingham, personally, but we know nothing.
Pretty great place.
It's a pretty great place. Yeah. Maria Sharapova is going to be there, obviously. We'll talk about that very briefly in a moment, because I think we've done Sharapova to death, and it's going to have to be renamed the Sharapova podcast.
No, we'll keep calling it the tennis podcast.
We
but
will.
Yeah, she's been given a
yeah,
wild card,
she keeps
she?
Giving us news. But anyway, I just think it's so great, and she did a fantastic interview with Christopher Clary.
Oh, I haven't read
in the
that
New
yet.
York Times. She's been training in Minsk for her comeback, and by all accounts, she's in sensational condition, sensational form. It's just fascinating. If you ever have felt like you don't get Victoria Azarenka and you haven't been able to engage with her, read that interview, because it is sensational, and she is so motivated to come back. I really think she's going to light up the tennis world. I really do. And we'll be seeing her in a matter of weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, it's bonkers, isn't
pretty
it?
Pretty cool, isn't it?
It's really great. So, we
Petra Kvitova's been practicing. You know, who maybe she's going to come back as well. You know,
I think hopes of her coming back to Paris are unlikely. Yeah, now, probably. Aren't they? She's on the entry list. She has the option, but I feel like we might.
It's nice
know
to
about
see
her
hitting tennis balls.
Awesome,
so, crikey,
that is awesome. So yes, Birmingham. You heard me mentioning it. Maria Sharapova will be there. That was confirmed this week. She won't be in the Wimbledon main draw by wildcard, because she announced on her website this week that she wouldn't be requesting one from Wimbledon. Pretty sure she'd already requested one from Wimbledon, but informally, but she says, I won't be requesting one from Wimbledon. I will be playing qualies on the basis of my ranking, and that's that. And I think it's one of the first good PR moves that she's done. I think she should have done it months ago from a PR perspective, but it's still a good move.
Just quietly informed that she wouldn't have been getting a wild card, and that it might not be the worst idea in the world to announce that she is not going to apply for one. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe she just realised that that would probably be a good idea. I agree. I think she should have done that a long time ago. We've talked about that. But, yeah, anyway, she's playing qualies. Sounds like it's going to be televised. So that will be very interesting, if nothing else.
It certainly will be interesting. Other mopping up to do of just a few bits and bobs. It's not on our agenda, but given that I've mentioned Roger Federer attending Pippa Middleton's wedding, what do you make of that? Do you think they're actually friends?
Could be. He's best buds with all
friends,
sorts of
like
celebs,
they chat
isn't he?
Do you think they chat on the phone? Do you think they Skype? Do you think Pippa Middleton knows Roger Federer's middle name and vice versa?
I don't know what his name is. Middle name is. What is it?
You're not. Did he go to your wedding?
It's public information. Surely it's on Wikipedia.
He was unable to attend,
isn't
it? Wasn't he?
Let's find out what Roger Federer's middle name is. I'm quite
okay.
curious.
Okay. But do you think she would know it without
Andrew
Googling?
Baron Murray.
Do you think he would know hers without Googling? You know what I'm getting at here. Was this just a sort of celeb type thing that celebby people do for their weddings, or do you think they're actually mates? If you haven't seen the pictures of Roger and Mirka Federer attending the wedding of Pippa Middleton in Berkshire, just down the road from my mum and dad, then do check them out.
Looks like Roger Federer hasn't got a middle name. So the answer to your question is no, I don't think she does know.
Do you think she knows that?
I don't know what your middle name is, Catherine. I hope I get invited to your wedding.
Do you not know my middle name? It's awful. It doesn't need to be disclosed on a tennis podcast. Anyway, okay. Well, again, touche then.
I
think the point is received. Other bits and bobs. Fabio Fognini has had a baby with Flavia Panetta, and he lost just in the nick of time to Alex Zverev in Rome, didn't he? Because I think the baby came along later that evening.
Just to be clear, he was trying his best. He was getting his clock cleaned by Alex
Zverev. He genuinely was, but really, that couldn't have worked out any better for anyone involved, particularly Flavia Panetta, who sounds like she's been very understanding throughout the whole thing. And they have had baby Federico, who is named after Federico Luzzi, who was an Italian player that passed away after suffering with leukemia a few years ago. And that's a very moving and classy move.
It is. It was the whole tennis world were devastated when they heard about Federico Luzzi passing away. I mean, he was only in his late 20s and very popular Italian player, and obviously somebody that they both would have known very well. And I think it's a lovely touch. It really is.
It's a lovely touch. It's a lovely story. They posted a picture on social media yesterday of them leaving the hospital looking absolutely delighted. It's just nice. And maybe one day Federico will be battling it out with Sofia and Stefan and whatever Novak Djokovic's new baby's name will be.
Should we have a pole vault on who might come out on top?
Two sets of Federer twins. And no, we won't. And I just have one final bit of any other business from the agenda. Laura Robson and Katie Bolter in the final in Japan of an ITF event.
Yeah.
And Laura Robson won and Katie Bolter was a runner-up, but it brings their rankings to 169 for Robson and 242, I think.
243 for Katie Bolter, who's 20 years of age and has been quietly winning in tournaments and getting points over the last few months. And that's a very, very respectable ranking now for her. She's tall, she's strong. From Nigel Sears, who I've been commentating with, former coach of Anna Ivanovic and Daniela Hantikova, said in terms of her physique and the way she hits the ball, she's not unlike Daniela Hantikova in terms of the qualities that she has, the raw material at least. And let's hope from a British perspective that she's able to build on that. But that's a really good result. Laura Robson, I didn't realise that that's actually the best result really she's had since she's made her comeback, and that's a rise of some 50 or 60 places, I think, 169 in the world.
And it's significant in terms of qualies for Grand Slams, isn't it? That ranking will get her into qualies for Grand Slams, which could be a big deal. And I'm just pleased she's still out there and is being rewarded for knuckling down and getting her teeth stuck into what must be a really difficult fight. You know, lots wouldn't have the stomach for that, having been where she's been. You know, she's out in Japan playing to no one, you know, and those are tough slogs. I think she's been there for 3 or 4 weeks playing back-to-back events, and you know, there's no glamour, there's not much reward, and she's knuckling down and she's doing it, and I think that's great. And good on Katie Bolter as well. And yeah, I think that just about wraps up the podcast for this week. We will be back on Saturday for our French Open preview show. David will be here, I'll be in Paris, and big news, it will be our 5th anniversary as the Tennis Podcast. So something for you all to look forward to, certainly for us to look forward to, certainly an excuse for me to go to a French patisserie and buy some cake, which I definitely will be doing. We have been the Tennis Podcast. David Law, thank you very much for your company. We'll be back in just 5 days' time, brought to you, of course, as always, in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.